CV Racine, W251 BU Kenosha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Clean Origin.
I'm Stacy Lynn. Early this morning, Iran was accused of seizing a commercial ship with links to Israel as it passed through the Strait of Hormuz. The BBC's James Lansdale.
The Israeli Foreign Minister Israel Katz has accused Iran of piracy.
The U.S. and Israel are on high alert for a potential attack by Iran that could escalate regional tensions stoked by the war in Gaza. CBS News Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Margaret Brennan.
Since October 7th and the beginning of this war in Israel, the concern has been what could be the event that would spiral this into a regional conflict. Iran and the United States have been sending messages to each other saying neither of us want to escalate this. Israel carrying out that strike inside Syria that killed Iranian generals really was an escalation.
An attack could happen any time now. A shopping mall in Sydney, Australia, is the scene of the latest mass attack. A man went on a stabbing rampage. Six are dead. The suspect was shot and killed by police. This man described the chaos.
I heard people yelling and screaming, running. So I said, okay, there must be something going on. So I saw the copper. I followed her all the way upstairs. Just as we were coming around the corner, there he was. He just came in and just started floating towards us. And then she shot him. She didn't shoot him. Well, he would have kept going. He was on the rampage. He was on the bloody rampage.
Police have no idea of a motive yet. In Texas, a man driving a stolen big rig semi-truck intentionally crashed into a government office building, killing one person and injuring more than a dozen others. Katira Winfrey is with CBS in Houston.
The truck was carrying a heavy load of rebar, steel enforcement, when Parker slammed it into the building where various licensing services are provided. Authorities say he had been there the previous day.
Parker did come to the DPS Burnham office where he was denied his commercial driver license.
The mayor said it could have been even worse had Parker not been pulled out of the driver's seat and put in handcuffs by law enforcement.
Had it not been for their quick action, the suspect was backing the vehicle up and with the intent of going into it again.
O.J. Simpson's brain will be incinerated, not investigated. The New York Post is reporting he's expected to be cremated Tuesday in Las Vegas. And despite multiple requests from scientists, his family has no plans to donate his brain for research. They were asking to study the brain to see if he suffered from CTE, a degenerative brain disease afflicting many retired football players who suffered multiple concussions during their careers. This is CBS News.
Don't pay retail for diamonds. Come to cleanorigin.com, the lab-grown diamond experts. Mention code RADIO10 for 10% off. Cleanorigin.com, online or one of our retail stores.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Wisconsin is having a green energy construction boom. As Mike Moan reports, that's good news for Wisconsin's unionized construction workers.
Four major utilities operating in Wisconsin recently announced a pledge to hire union workers for clean energy development tied to federal incentives under the Inflation Reduction Act. Kent Miller of the Wisconsin Laborers District Council says it paves the way for a smoother transition to more wind, solar, and similar projects.
With the commitment from the utilities to make sure that the wages and benefits are the same standard as legacy energy, it allows workers to focus on updating their skill sets to meet the needs of the project and not worry about are there concessions and wages and benefits.
In earlier phases of renewable energy construction, Miller says some project leaders focused on bringing in out-of-state non-union contractors. Now that Wisconsin labor organizations have a seat at the table, Miller says the next challenge is getting more advance notice before a project breaks ground so they can ramp up recruiting well ahead of time. For example, Miller says a utility-scale solar development requires a lot of labor, and they want as many people as possible to know about potential openings. He says that includes apprenticeships.
Somebody could start their apprenticeship career, complete their apprenticeship, and become a journey worker through the duration of a utility-scale solar project.
He points to the Paris Solar Farm project in Kenosha County, which at its peak had nearly 150 laborers. Of the apprentices, 70% were women or people of color. Analysts say the hiring pledge and associated projects could lead to nearly 19,000 construction jobs that come with prevailing wages. This is Mike Bowen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bowen.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Lots of sunshine and mild today with highs in the mid-60s. A partly cloudy sky tonight, a little breezy, lows into the low 50s. And sunshine continues Sunday, highs to the upper 60s. Partly cloudy and low 60s on Monday. Currently 51 degrees.
Like a grand slam on your radio dial. Home of the Brewers. 1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM WRJN.
This is our broadcast on Civic Media throughout the state of Wisconsin and beyond. My name is Jim Santel, your host this hour and every weekend, discussing issues in law and government, the administration of justice in America. This weekend, talking about this major event happening in American history beginning on Monday morning. That is the first time a former president of the United States of America has been placed on trial. This one in a state criminal court in Manhattan, in New York City. And we are talking a lot about the pretrial process by which this case has gotten here, the basic focus of it, the substance of the charges, and discussing what Judge Juan Merchan, who is the presiding judge or justice, as the judges are called in that venue, what he's going to be doing with respect to the selection of a jury, the questions he's going to be asking them to determine whether or not they can be fair and impartial, the things he's going to say to them about what this case is about, and the specific admonition that they are not to bring into the courtroom, at least their deliberation on the courtroom, anything other than their open ears and eyes, their capacity to do critical thinking to determine whether or not the government, as it always is obliged to do, has presented evidence beyond a reasonable doubt in support of the 34 counts or some of them that would justify a verdict of guilty in this matter. Again, Donald Trump presumed innocent until such time as the jury does just that. Who's going to be testifying in the course of the trial? Well, plainly, we've talked a lot about Michael Cohen. We've talked a lot about Stormy Daniels. There's another fellow named David Pecker, who is the former publisher of the National Enquirer. He's also involved in this with respect to the catch and kill aspect of this case. It's entirely possible that other members of the former Trump administration will also be called in to testify. Hope Hicks, a former campaign and White House aide to Donald Trump. Others who, according to the district attorney, also have information that is relevant to this particular transaction or set of transactions that are the focus of the financial charges in this case. But five or six other people also on that list, names we may have heard of from the Trump administration. No obligation to call everyone on a witness list, but again, an obligation by the prosecution to present evidence. It is the burden of the government to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. Defense, Donald Trump has no obligation whatsoever to present any evidence, including testimony of his own. Even so, Donald Trump, in anticipation of this and a reaction to the judge's serial denials of his request for a delay, a number of delays sought by the defense in recent days, he said on Friday that he did, in fact, plan to testify at this trial. He did call the case and things related to the case administered by Judge Merchan. He called it a scam. He said, all I can do is tell the truth. And the truth is they have no case. Now, again, the defendant does not have to make that particular decision until the judge looks at the defense and says you may present your case. And even during the course of that presentation, it is up to the defendant whether or not to take the stand. And we will see whether Donald Trump is true to his word about taking the stand. No presumption against him if he does not take the stand. And indeed, Prosecutors cannot argue. It is a matter, it would be a mistrial if they were to suggest to the jury that the failure of the defendant to testify should be taken into account by them. The defendant always has his Fifth Amendment right not to testify. That attends to Donald Trump at all times. And about this process called jury selection, Donald Trump said that the process is largely luck. He said it depends on who you get. Well, not entirely. The judge is doing his very best in this very human enterprise to try to determine exactly who those jurors would be. And continuing our discussion about the kinds of things that the jurors are going to be asked on Monday and Tuesday and throughout the week and probably into the following week as well, as this entire veneer, the entire group of jurors is called in and asked some 42 different questions about who they are, their background, along the way, focusing specifically upon Donald Trump and the allegations in this case. The judge is going to ask them some things that I do find interesting. He's going to ask them, have you ever considered yourself a supporter of or belong to any of the following? The QAnon movement, Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, the Three Percenters, the Boogaloo Boys, or Antifa? All those groups in various ways we've talked a lot about on this broadcast, in previous broadcasts. Some of them, the subjects, obviously, of criminal prosecutions and convictions and sentences for things related to the January 6th matter in 2021. This case, of course, harkens back to the days right before and after the 2016 election and into 2017, related again to the alleged violation of the financial laws in the state of New York. Interesting that the justice, is going to be asking about affiliations or support to any of these groups. Interesting as well, question 31, do you have any strong opinions or firmly held beliefs about whether a former president may be criminally charged in state court? Sort of asking almost a legal question of the jurors and whether they have any strong opinions about that sort of jurisdictional, that power, that capacity argument. Do you have any feelings or opinions about how Donald Trump is being treated in this case? Obviously, the judge responding in some ways to the things that are out there in the media. Donald Trump maintaining, as he did as late as this past week, that he is being treated unfairly, not only in the decision not to grant these delays, but in other matters related to pretrial dispositions. And once again, the judge asking repeatedly during the course of these 42 questions, can you assure us that you will decide this case solely on the evidence you see and hear in the courtroom and the law as I give it to you? Significantly, do you have any strong opinions or firmly held beliefs about Donald Trump or the fact that he's a current candidate for president that would interfere with your ability to be fair and impartial? He's going to ask if you read or listened to any of the books written by Michael Cohen. He's also going to ask about any books that the members of the jury pool have read that the defendant himself has written, Donald Trump has written. If so, which ones are those? And significantly, do you have any opinions about the legal limits governing political contributions, an issue not really related specifically to this case, but unless the judge determined that somehow that is important to know. Again, not asking what those opinions are necessarily. That might be a follow-up, but do you have any opinions about that? And once again, can you promise to set aside anything you have heard or read about in this case and render your verdict solely on the evidence presented in this courtroom and the law as given to you by me, by the judge? Can you do that? Can you separate out any biases, any sorts of prejudices and preconceptions that you have, and make your determination based exclusively on what you see, what you hear, what you consume in this trial? Can you assure me, the judge will be saying, that you will follow my instructions and on the definition of reasonable doubt and the presumption of innocence, once again, that attends this defendant? The Constitution, he will tell the members of the jury, provides the defendant has no burden to introduce any evidence or testify in any criminal case. Do you understand that? And will you not impute anything to the defendant if the defendant chooses not to go down that road? In the end, number 42, is there any reason, would it be bias or anything else, that would prevent you from being fair and impartial if you are selected as a jury for this case? Lots and lots of things for jurors among a group, probably about 500 people coming in groups of maybe 50, maybe 100, maybe something more, something less. Ask those questions to determine whether or not they should be impaneled. The process itself, the judge himself will probably strike for what's called cause. Those jurors who indicate either initially or during the course of this colloquy, this conversation back and forth, will determine whether or not some of them should be stricken because they simply cannot do this job. And then after he has determined that something less than that total group of 500 or several hundred or whatever it may be, then the parties themselves have the capacity, through a process that he will also describe, to strike witnesses, to strike jurors from this process, from the lists that are then presented to them, based upon things that they have heard during the course of this voir dire. That process, again, going to take a number of days, maybe even into early the following week, before the judge can have them all stand, raise their right hands, and promise, commit, swear to hear the evidence in this case, and to invest in it all of their good judgment, all of their good assessment, the critical skills, thinking that they need to apply to all of this, and render a true and just verdict based upon their impartial views about this. Now, this goes to a larger question that I suspect